Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 100 Sanford podcast. We are in the building. It's Trigger Trey. It's Lamar. It's post Natty time. We done did it, Trey.
National champion Trey for now.
Yes, sir. You got to change that on your Twitter account, man.
It can't be. It's already been changed.
It's got to be national champion.
Trey, national champion Trey. No more 1980. It's national champion Trey.
Dude, what have you been doing since the Natty, man? I know me. I've been trying to rest up because I've been going crazy. No matter where I go, everybody's just like, man, I'm happy for the dogs. I'm happy for the dogs. But what have you been doing? Because I know, heck, man, if there's anybody that control, it can, it, you know, it's you. It's you.
I've been letting them tweets fly. I done had some people unfollow me. Block me, I don't care. I'm popping shit all year. Man,
I think that
it's been late. Every day I'm reminding myself of we're gonna call it the pick six, but it's really the chip six.
Yes, sir. I agree, man. Like I think what's funny though, here's the funny thing. So I go out and I get my food before the game. And no matter where I go, I'd have everybody stopping me saying, because I had all my Georgia stuff on, you know, they're like, hope the dogs win, hope the dogs win. And then I had to stop and pause. Like, wait a minute. Everybody been talking noise about the dogs for like since 1980. Why all of a sudden everybody want to jump on the bandwagon now? And it was almost like everybody just wanted Nick Saban and Alabama to lose for, you know, the first time and who knows how long against the dogs, but it's almost like taking down the dark side or something like that, or taking down COVID, like you called it earlier with that pick six. But I don't know, man. It's a weird thing because, like, you know, now we're national champions. Now we're the king of the college football mountain, and everybody's kind of bowing down to us. But at the same time, it feels weird because for the longest time, everybody's been throwing shots at us. What you got?
They said Nolan Smith might return for a senior year.
Whoa. Dude, you know how big that would be?
Man, that would be huge.
That, man, look, the very first tweet I put out after the Natty was about Nolan Smith and that last sack that he got to end the game and how he talked about how he wanted to be legendary and how he put people to sleep.
That was legendary. Blew up.
That's legendary. For him to come back, man, he's not just making himself a DGD, which he already is. He is going to completely make himself legendary when he comes back because they need that senior leadership next year, which we'll get into because we're losing a lot. But man, look, what's your thoughts? What's your thoughts on the championship? How do you feel now after you know, exercising the demons, so to speak, and now we can actually call ourselves national champions? What's your thoughts on it?
My thoughts on it? The crazy thing, my thoughts on the whole national championship, we did not believe that Stetson Bennett could actually win us a national championship. We all wanted JT from the jump to finish. Kirby was not giving us – Kirby didn't care. Kirby went – he was going – this is what Kirby told us. This is what he basically said. Kirby was like, shut the up. I'm not playing JT. I'm riding with Stetson Bennett, and this is how we're going to rock. We're going to win with Stetson – the mailman, Benny. Like, Kirby literally just told us to shut the up, slap it out of our face. Like, I'm going out here winning this national championship with Stetson Bennett. And he did it. Shit, he shut me the because, look, I'm happy. We national championships.
I'm happy. Now, you know what? I mean, what's cool about that, right? Because Kirby's now been there for 6 years. And when you go back to the way he's utilized quarterbacks at Georgia, especially going back to the whole quote-unquote debacle with Fields and how everybody thinks Fields went to Ohio State, balled out. We had Jake Fromm, and people are thinking, well, man, if Justin Fields was here, he would have balled out. No, it wouldn't have been the same offense. But when Kirby decided to go with Stetson, and we all were upset about that originally, I think some of us got on board. I know I got on board after the offense kept rolling. I was like, look, just stick with whatever we got. I don't want to switch up. I don't even care about all that. Just get
that's
us.
That's how I would. I'm like, man, if he winning games, man, I don't care. Just win. Right. That's all I care about. Just get the W.
How in the world could anybody at this point, moving forward, ever question anything he does? It's kind of like in the Nick Saban tree of thought with Alabama. You can't question that man from what anything he does because he's a Natty champion. You know what I mean? So how can you question anything about Kirby and what Kirby's going to do with this program?
Look, that man. Look, all I'm going to say is that man. Literally, we all know Stetson Bennett was a walk on before he got to Georgia. He was a walk on scout team.
Scout team.
Went to JUCO, came back, boom, and we all questioned, like, in the games, like, how is Stetson Bennett starting?
Because
we have a five-star quarterback, JT. We got Carson Beck, and we have Brock.
Another five-star. Right.
And this Walko somehow is starting at a big-time D1 school. And it's going to be – and it's a crazy story, like Cinderella story. It's a great story for him to go out. And this man came in. Went 13-0. Well, not 13-0, 13-1, and beat Nick Saban. Yeah, and played a great game, by the way. That ball he threw to AJ Mitchell, that was a great ball, by the way. That was a great ball.
You know, let me touch on that real quick, because I know watching the game, I mean, look, I'm ecstatic, man. I barely slept in the last 24, 48 hours. I mean, I slept one hour after we won the Natty. I was up, you know, Twitter fingers was going, Facebook fingers was going, you know, doing edits, doing work for the program, everything, right? But what bothered me most was even during the game, right? Because, I mean, I called it. I said I thought that we was going to actually beat Alabama down. I really thought we were going to hold them to 13 points, almost held them to 18. I called 41-13 to start, you know, that was my prediction. But we almost held them to that. But my main thing was when people were so upset about Stetson, and this will kind of take us into that first half. People were upset about Stetson's performance, and I'm like, what are you watching? Outside of the
That's
first
how I
play.
Was. Like, it's like, check this out. The SEC championship game, people got to realize right at halftime, we gave up 400 yards.
Yes.
And 24 points.
Yes.
They did not even score a touchdown in the first half on us.
Right.
This game, they did not score a touchdown. They had Michi, okay. But when we played against Clemson, we had five wide receivers out. And that was the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm. Preach. Nobody's saying nothing about that, though, right?
That's what I'm saying. Nobody's saying nothing about that. We literally, whole season, we did not have our complete receiving corps.
And a rookie, and a freshman tight end starting his first game.
We had a freshman tight end came in this offseason. We had a freshman tight end who led the receiving corps.
Yes.
I get Bama fans saying, oh, yeah, Michu's out. Then J-Mo went out. But remember, ain't this why you recruit?
That's right. Well, let me go back to Stet, though. This is what bothered me. If you look at the first two plays, okay, he has the rollout, boom. Alabama just breaks containment. You know, they come and they sack, you know, Stet for 14 yards. In the third play, he gets that little scramble. He runs, almost coughs up the football, and everybody's like, he's nervous. I'm like, no, he's not nervous, man. It's just part of the game. Stuff happens. But to blame Stetson in that first half on a lot of the things that were happening was not actually right. You got to go back and you got to look at what was actually happening up front with the offensive line. And what changed the complexity of this game and allowed him to settle down was when they move Jamari Sawyer to right guard and they brought in Broderick Jones on the left side. Now, I know Broderick had a tough day on that left side. I ain't going to lie. But
yeah,
what it is
– replacing Will Anderson. Yeah.
Right, but here's my point. Here's my point to that. No, Matt, this was the beauty of Nick Saban and his genius. Nick Saban comes from that Belichick school of thought where we're going to attack your biggest weakness. So what did they do with Will Anderson this game? They moved Will Anderson all over the defensive line, and no matter where the weakest point was, he lined up. That's why he was getting so much pressure on the quarterback. So you got to give a lot of kudos to Stetson because there were times that he stepped up in the pocket, made some key throws, got rid of the ball as quick as possible. Even though some people like it wasn't quick enough, he got rid of it. But when you go back and look at what he did, man, and how he played throughout this game, and even going into the second half, and we're going to get there too, when he had that key fumble and he came back that next drive and led them on a crazy drive with that throw to A.D. Mitchell for a touchdown, man, you got to give it up to the kid. And that's why I kind of go back to Kirby.
I'm glad you talked about that. One thing, can we please appreciate James Cook block on, I think it was Dallas Turner he blocked
Yeah, man. Yes.
Can we please appreciate that? Because that was a good block. That was a fantastic block on James Cook picking up that blitz.
Man, when people really go back and watch this game, and it's going to be lived on in infinite, you know, forever. But when people go back and watch this game, they're going to see so many key plays that were made by key people at various times. James Cook, like you just mentioned, the key block, the 67-yard run. You know,
William Poole, DK. Another one. Especially DK. DK got burnt. Well, he got beat off the line before the pick six.
Yes.
He got beat off the line. He didn't never give up. He still played the ball and managed to, you know, make him work for the catch, try to give it one hand, Jacoby Brissett with one hand. Then that led up to Ringo pick six.
Yeah.
Chip six.
Man, there are so many key plays that people are going to go back that are going to live in infamy, and they're going to have video, GIFs, pictures, autographed pictures of. And you need to go back and appreciate some of the small things that were done in this game, because it was a collective group that won this game. It wasn't Stetson by himself. It wasn't Stetson that was going to lose this game by himself. There was a lot of stuff that went into this game, but let's talk about that defense, man. You know, the number one defense all year long. You know, we go out and we give up 41 points to Alabama in the SEC championship game. They come back, redeem themselves against Michigan. What were your thoughts on the defense and their performance in this natty?
The crazy thing, I thought the defense played great. Everybody played great, even the secondary. What made the secondary play phenomenal, because Singh was on a whole nother level that game.
Locked in, right?
He was, Agent 16 was on a whole nother level. He was good in coverage, making tackles. Even though a couple of times Brian Robb did bring it to him, but B-Robb is a physical back, man. He just a great physical back.
Shot. Well, anytime you try to tackle a guy that big, that strong, that fast, high,
hard like that,
might get trouble.
You're going to feel it.
Yeah.
And another, I thought Nolan Smith played good. He was arch. Let's talk about Travion Walker. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, man.
Travion Walker was a man possessed last night.
When you look at it, I think I saw the stat where they had 39 pressures, 4 sacks. Bryce Young, you know, even though he threw for 369, it really wasn't a strong 369. I mean,
heck, it wasn't a strong
57 times. You know, that first game, it was like you said, over 400 total yards in the first half. And Bryce Young,
he worked for them yards. He worked for them.
He worked for every single 369. And you got to admit, after that first drive that Alabama had, where they had that long sustained drive, I think it was either 11 or 14 plays. That culminated in the field goal, which was a great job by the defense as well to keep them from the end zone. People, you know, it kind of shook Dog Nation up a little bit. It was like, okay, we're going to have the same thing. No, it wasn't going to be the same thing. And you could see the adjustment that the coaching staff made from the first time they played to the second time. First of all, they were sound on assignments. Like you said, Lewis Seen came in locked in. You had Dean that came in locked in. And Nolan Smith played a hell of a game at defensive end, setting the edge, not allowing guys to get outside, get inside of them, closing up those holes. And the other person to set the stages, man, I'm telling you right now, was Davis.
Oh, yeah.
That first hit that he had.
Yeah, He set the tone because he let
them know immediately, nah, you know what, I'm here to play. And if I'm here to play, all my dogs are here to play behind me. I thought the defense played pretty well. You know, a lot of questions were raised about Williams going down. What are your thoughts on that? With Williams going down with the injury, the ACL tear, how much of an effect do you think that had in this game?
It affected the game a lot because we all know some of them. It was only one receiver that had a lot of playing time on Bama that played on the outside was Jacoby Brooks. All the other season receivers didn't have PT like that, didn't have experience like that, game experience, in other words. So, J-Mo going down affected the game a lot for Bama offense because they already had Michi. Michi was done for the year.
Right.
And J-Mo was that leader. Jacoby Brooks, don't get me wrong, he's nice, but he's not that type of impact player yet.
Right.
He's just a freshman. He's good, but he's not that game changer like J-Mo is right now. In the future, he's gonna be that guy soon. But that moment, but you did have some other guys step up like a Jai Hall, but he had some big time drops in that game. A lot of receivers had some big time drops. So losing J-Mo hurt them a lot in that game.
Yeah. You know, I kind of wanted to touch upon that because you had everybody, you got all the naysayers saying, well, if Williams is in the game, Alabama wins that game. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that, first of all, Williams goes down in the first half. And if anybody made the better adjustments, it was Georgia making the better adjustments in the second half. So who's to know what type of adjustments are made to shut him down in the second half and actually neutralize what he was doing? Because, again, he did not have the big plays that he had in that first game, outside of when he tore his ACL. That was another blown coverage. Mm-hmm. Two blown coverages in that game really would have changed the complexity, which was, one, Williams, that long play, and then Latu, when he got loose in the secondary against Georgia and Ringo tracks him down and saves the touchdown. That was another blown coverage. But outside of that, the Dogs were – I mean, they were locking boys up really the entire game. They weren't letting guys get out of their grasp, and they weren't allowing them to have these splash plays, which really defines Alabama's offense, not just against what we did in the championship game, but all season long. They're known for those splash plays, those killer darts that they throw into you when you think you got them corralled, and then all of a sudden they take the life out of you. I think with Williams going down, yes, it affects it. I mean, man, look, you can't – that's a future first-round pick NFL talent.
It's hard to replace that.
It's hard to replace that.
But on the spot, it's literally hard to replace that. Right on the spot like that, yeah, it's hard to replace that.
But that's why you recruit, right? Mm-hmm. You started it off by saying first game of the year, we played Clemson and we got five guys down. Five receivers. Oh, yeah. You had a guy like Ladd McConkey come up and all of a sudden he's a star this season because five receivers are down. AD Mitchell
is a young – we talked about him at the end of the season. In the G-Day, young star in the making.
That's right. So,
which he did, because
I just believe that in big time games, big time people show up, and it just wasn't their time for their big time players to show up. They're gonna have their day. You know, you're gonna have Hall that's gonna have his day. You're gonna have, you know, Holden and all the rest of these guys are gonna have their day at Alabama. I mean, heck, they're already preseason ranked number one, and Nick is gonna round those boys into shape. But like, you can't say this game was just on Williams alone,
right? Because, look, we had our backups. Look at A.D. Mitchell. A.D. Mitchell's not even a starter. Caught a big-time touchdown pass.
Exactly. I mean, and when you think about it, you would have thought as the game was progressing, the guy that was going to catch that touchdown pass was going to be our boy George Pickens, who had that phenomenal
layout. He set the tone on offense with that big catch. He really set the tone. It's a big momentum shift when he caught that. And the crazy thing about that, I tweeted out, it was literally with the same exact play from Cincinnati when he caught that big catch first.
Yeah.
The same exact play.
Well, let's switch to that, man. I mean, what did you think about the offense as a whole? I know we talked about Stetson, but what did you think completely from, you know, whistle to whistle, what this offense did against Alabama in this Natty game?
It started off slow, but at the end of the time, it started picked up. We all questioned some of the play calling a little bit. And the O-line was not his best at pass protection, but it is Alabama they're playing. Cause Alabama do have a sound, the good defensive line. Cause they have Dallas Turner, Memphis. Let's not forget Will Anderson, to me, one of the best college football players in the game.
Best defensive player this year, if you ask me.
No doubt about that. Cause he was everywhere. He was everywhere on the field.
Yeah, man. I mean, it didn't start off well. Yeah, I think the main key for me was that offensive line. And I think once they made the adjustment, and I was tweeting this as the game was going on, I was actually tweeting things from my personal and the 100 account, that if they made the adjustments on the offensive line, we were going to see a major difference in how this game was called by Todd Monken. They had to be able to run the football and put themselves – and I even talked about this on the pregame pod – they have to run the football and put themselves in a position where it's second down and five. It's second down in three. You know what I mean? Third down and one, third down and two. You cannot allow Alabama to bring the pressure that they want to bring on third down when you're third and long. And I think you saw the difference, especially going in towards late in the second quarter, going into the third and fourth quarter where the play calls changed dramatically. Outside of that Stetson fumble, which I still don't think it was a fumble. I mean, that's a whole nother story. But outside of that, the play calling did get better. I didn't like the double reverse that set us back with
yeah, that, I was on Twitter mad about that. I couldn't believe he called that.
I
could not believe he called that in crunch time. I could not believe that.
Now, mind you, if it works, he's genius, right? Because nobody would have thought that he would have called that. But at the same time, it was like that was the only snafu, in my opinion, where it was like, why did you call that call?
But, yeah, I want to know what made you think that, oh, you all the way in the booth, what made you think that was going to work?
Exactly.
I'd say earlier, like in the first quarter, you called that, but this time in the fourth, when it's crunch time, like, no.
But when you go down to it, it worked out the exact way that most national people thought, and we thought that it would work out. If we were able to keep the ball, not turn the ball over, win the turnover battle on offense versus Alabama's offense, we were going to win that game. And when you looked at it, you had Bryce Young, he had two interceptions. Bennett gives up the fumble, but at the same time, no turnovers, no big-time turnovers inside your own 20 or 30 outside of that fumble, which, again, culminated into a field goal, not a touchdown. They held him to a field goal on that. So with that happening, this offense was really efficient moving forward, going from mid-second quarter going on. I mean, look how many yards. Zeus, 13 carries, 84 yards and a touchdown. James Cook, who I thought they should have used a lot more, quite honestly.
Yeah.
6 carries, 77 yards. I mean, he had the big 67-yarder, but – I thought he was going to be more of a factor in the pass game.
And I thought so, too. I thought he was going to be more a factor in both plays because James Cook is really, to me, our best back.
He's the best complete back.
Yeah, he had a hell of a season. And, you know, he's going to the NFL, which is – he came back for this. Mm-hmm. And you look at his stat. This season, he had 1,000 yards from scrimmage.
Yeah.
Combined, that's – he's going to do great in the NFL, man. He's going to do great.
Yeah, for him, he solidified himself as one of those top backs, one of those great change of pace backs in the NFL. Because if you look at his size, I mean, I remember him coming in as a freshman. We were like, wait.
Oh, he was small.
Whose brother is this? Because his brother's thick, you know what I mean? Has the ability to, you know, get inside the tackles and inside the holes. But he was small. But even now, he's still a smaller back. But he's made himself
He just built up a lot of muscle on him now.
Yeah. He's made himself a lot of money, man. Heck, I'm hoping my Steelers actually pick him up to go with Najee.
Man,
he's a great change of pace.
I hope the Falcons might get him in the third or fourth round.
Come on, man. I know you're keeping it all GA today, but quit being greedy. I mean, my Steelers got to pick up somebody outside of Jarvis and Hines.
The Falcons ain't been good since 23. Need some help. Need Jesus.
What about the coaching, man? Let's get into the coaching real quick, because one of the things about it was that everybody thought it was going to come down to the coaching. Heck, even in the pregame, that's all they kept saying. Georgia got the talent. Bama's not as loaded as Georgia. It's going to come down to, can Kirby Smart exercise the demon, so to speak? What did you think about that?
To me, I thought they really called up just by the play calling. Some play calling had me a little iffy, but other than that, I think the coaching staff had a great game. They called great. Just a maybe a little bit offensive play one. But other than that, everything was good to me. Defense played great. They made a lot of adjustments on the defense. A lot of adjustments.
Man, go ahead.
Look at the big time adjustment was the coverage was better. The coverage was a little bit better than last in the SEC championship. The coverage was way better. Mm-hmm. Remember we said if we don't let Bryce Young control the game with his legs, we have a good chance. Look what happened. He wasn't able to be comfortable. They never let him get comfortable.
That's right. Yeah, I thought, you know, again, going into the pregame pod, I mean, I brought that up. When you got Shu, you got Muschamp, you had Lanning that came back, which, again, a lot of shout-outs go to him, man, because that's a lot of integrity, because he could have been somewhere else recruiting for Oregon, but he was working, you know, double time, triple time to do both jobs probably. And a lot of credit has to go to Dan Lanning as well, but also with Kirby, with that many minds and, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, I thought that they were able to come up, and they were going to come up with a defensive game plan that was going to slow down Alabama, that was going to increase the pressure, that was going to allow them to kind of focus and pinpoint where their mistakes were in that first game. And you heard Quay Walker, even before the game, you know, when he did his press conference, he said, look, if we limit the blown coverages and we just settle down, it's going to be a different type of game. And that's what we saw. 39 pressures, man. I mean, when you looked at Auburn earlier in the year, you looked at Tennessee, you looked at LSU, they were able to do the same thing. Even A&M, they were able to do the same thing, get pressure on Bryce Young. And when you get pressure on him, he's not as effective as most quarterbacks are not going to be. He's not Superman. And I thought that them getting that added pressure, bringing blitz schemes inside, outside, cross blitz, fire blitzes, I mean, anything that they brought, it was really effective. And I think it just didn't slow down Bryce. It actually gave less confidence in that receiving core, which helps and causes drops as well. I thought the coverage was exceptional. I mean, heck, again, there weren't very many blown
It wasn't plays. That many blown coverage.
Guys weren't wide open like they were the first game, man. I mean, there was some good coverage, and even guys, Alabama receivers that could have caught some balls or dropped some balls, at least we were there to make plays and, you know, pulling an arm, tugging a jersey, something like that. That's football. That happens. But you got to give credit to the defense because, you know, again, one of the narratives on Kirby is that he's not going to change. He's hard-headed. And he wasn't. It was a different scheme. It was a different program that went into this game, and he actually came in, dialed in, and I think that alone tells you a lot about his progression as a head coach and the progression of this team moving forward, where he's going to trust the talent of his team. And I thought that's what we had to do, which was trust the talent, right? It's not game one anymore. It's 15 games in, and your team is now, heck, a year removed from where they started at the start of the season. So I thought that was paramount as well, man. What's the legacy? What's the legacy of this team, man? I mean, they keep talking about it, 1980, first championship since 1980. What is the legacy of this Georgia Bulldog team for you?
They solidified they self in the legendary books. Coming back, a lot of them came back unfinished business that started after the Cincinnati game. A lot of them came back for this reason right here and stayed home. Just to beat Bama in the national championship. Then have, after all these heartbreaks we had against Bama, man. Second and 26, the bag of quarterback Jalen Hurts coming in, all in to win them the game, all these heartbreaks, and we finally got one of them back. It's a great feeling, man. We national champions. That's all, man. That's all.
You know, we were talking about, I'm like you, man. Like, first of all, I really did want to blow them out. Like, just kicked it in the dirt. I mean, straight up. But to win it the way that we won it, where it ends with the Ringo pick six, you know, where Alabama's coming back. And remember, anytime a Georgia was coming back or trying to come back or Georgia's up, Alabama just comes and steals it from us and pulls the rug out from underneath us or takes the ball away from us like we're Charlie Brown and Lucy. But this time it didn't happen. And you could see the dejection on Alabama fans' faces in the stadium where they really thought they were looking at something that wasn't even real. I mean, like, they were stunned. They were stunned by what we did. And when you look at how Nolan said he wanted to be legendary, Dean said they wanted to be legendary. To me, that is the narrative of this season. From game one to game 15 and being national champions, they have solidified themselves as being legendary for the University of Georgia. That should be their whole moniker in terms of who they are. Because when you talk about Davis saying, hey, I'm coming back for unfinished business, he could have went to the NFL last year. Would he have been a first-round pick? Maybe not. Second-round pick, third-round pick, getting that bag that everybody talks about, but all the guys that came back, Cook that came back, he didn't have to come back. You know, JT who came back, and even though he wasn't the starting quarterback, still came back, and he set the tone by wanting to work out with the wide receivers earlier in the offseason. You know, these guys talking about how much of a team they were in a complete unit and a family. Dude, they're legendary. They're going to go down in history as guys that can go anywhere they want and get anything they want at any time they want in the state of Georgia.
Right, anything they want to have.
So, yeah. I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean, I know we talk about Stetson a lot, and heck, Stetson could probably run for mayor, governor, whatever it may be. He's going to win it right now. But across the board, I think this team is just, it just means a lot. I think it means a lot to the entire university. It means a lot to the fans that have followed this team, not even just 1980, but before, because again, you probably thinking in 1980, you're going to have a dynasty with Dooley. You know what I mean? You finally win it. You finally crack that nut and you finally get that championship. And then all of a sudden things just slide out for 40 years. It means a lot, man. It really does. What do you think about it for Kirby? This is year six for Kirby Smart. You know, people have compared him to Nick Saban for the longest time. What's your thoughts on him and his legacy?
This is going to solidify him finally getting over the hump. Finally getting that monkey off his back. Okay, we all know they say he can't beat Nick Saban. He can't do that. He can't do that. He's finally getting over the hump.
Yeah, man. It's funny because people like to compare him to Big Stick Nick. I mean, come on, man. Nick is who Nick is. You got to give credit where credit's due. Seven national titles. I mean, he's the best. He's the GOAT, right? But I always go back and I try to tell people everywhere Nick won a championship, though, outside of the ones that he won without Kirby being in Alabama, Kirby was there. Kirby was the architect or part of being the architect or part of that team that helped develop those great Alabama defenses and set the stages for recruiting and became that monster recruiter that other guys had to look up to and follow suit. So I think this actually puts Kirby in his own lane, so to speak. He's no longer going to be the child of Nick Saban. Now he's the pop. And I think people are going to look at, well, guys like Dan Lanning go somewhere and become successful because of Kirby Smart. Where guys like Glenn Schumann, when he eventually leaves, and then these guys will eventually leave, you know, go somewhere and be great. I think it solidifies Kirby as being that top tier coach in college football, where for the longest time, at least since he's been a head coach of Georgia, nobody's wanted to give him those props, man. And I think it's time to give Kirby his props. And I think I think that narrative has been created because of what he did with the quarterback position. That's it. Because if you look at anybody else who had a chance to play for a natty in their first 2 years, that's very rare. But nobody looked at what was lost after that year of going to the national championship and guys going to the NFL. But I think this solidifies Kirby as being the top dog or one of the top dogs in college football. And he deserves a lot of props, man. Because what he's done to kind of change things around for the university and bring that pride back and bring that elusive championship, it's big time, man. It's big. But, you know, Kirby doesn't stop. College football doesn't stop. It might have been within 8 hours. They had odds already for, 2022, I'm sorry, who was going to be preseason ranked number one. Alabama's already preseason ranked number one. But let's talk about, you know, some early thoughts on 2022. And one of the reasons I'm bringing that up is, man, we got the portal. The portal's already open. You know, there's some rumors. There's some names that have come out that are already in the portal. What's your thoughts on that? Who's already in the portal?
For us, or, you know,
for us, yeah. Who's in the portal for us? You know.
You know, you got Marv Speed that's in the portal, and you got Jalen Johnson. Jalen Johnson is, I've got it, one that got that first support in the podcast. It's not bad blood between him, because we all know Jalen Johnson came in. He was a walk-on. Look, he earned a scholarship from Georgia and was able to get PT.
It's bound to happen, right? I mean, everybody can't play. And right now we're in the middle of this type of environment that every kid wants to play. Everybody wants to get their shot. And whether you can play for a natty or not, and I think it's going to show a lot who comes back to this team and who wants to leave. I think there's going to be some guys that know that they're not going to get the time that they want. So, heck, you might as well move on, right?
And
you
know, some of them do know they draft stock now. Some of them going to know, like, I'm hot right now. I need to strike while the fire is hot. I need to get it while it's hot. Like, I need to – boom, because you never know what could happen.
Yeah. Yeah, and I you have to, in this environment, I mean, I'm old school, man. I'm one of those guys that if you sign up for 4 years, you're going to play for 4 years, win, lose, or draw. That's what happens. But we're in an environment now that where you're at could define your legacy and define who you are as a player for the long term. Some guys have already put some tape out there for scouts playing with UGA, so they already know what they can kind of do. Now they can get a chance to transfer somewhere else and get some shine. Heck, I'm going to go back and look at, like, D-Rob, who's at Auburn, right? He's probably going to get a shot in the NFL because of the way that they used him in the offense. It allowed him to get more looks than he probably would have gotten when he was at UGA. I mean, heck, if he had been at Georgia this year, heck, it may have helped because it might have helped the depth in terms of receivers.
Yeah, but
week one, week two, week three.
Yeah, we was hurting that receiver.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, it helped him because it allowed scouts to see, hey, that's the same guy that was at Cal that was putting up numbers as a freshman. What happened when he went to Georgia? Was it the scheme? Was it the offense? Was it how they were utilizing him? And then he goes to Auburn, he puts up some decent numbers. So for some kids, it's going to help. For some, it's not going to help. And I think the number that I've seen is somewhere over 3,000 people are in the portal.
Yeah, that's crazy.
There's not that many.
There's not a lot of homes. And then you got to look at, you got JUCO too. Like,
yeah.
Like, to me, I think they really gonna buckle down on the transfer portal soon, because this is getting ridiculous. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah, they have to. In my opinion, and I'm more of this ilk, that you do so to protect the player themselves. Because you got a lot of kids that are getting some bad advice or even talking to their boys, talking to their family. Yeah, it's time to go. It's time to get some shine somewhere else. And you're thinking that you got a spot. And again, these guys are being promised, quote unquote, spots once the portal opens up. But what happens if somebody else decides to go there, then all of a sudden you don't have a spot. Now you're going from one school to maybe a lower tier Division I. You might even have to go Division II or JUCO, depending on how young and, you know, you are in your career. So to me, I think these guys need to settle down. They need to really, really evaluate who they're playing with. I'm not one of those people who I want to speculate. So I'm not going to go into certain names that have been mentioned with UGA. But there's some big names that, to me, I think if they stay, they still get the shine that they want to get. They still get the recognition that they want to get, and they still get the opportunity. And I'm saying it from this standpoint. When you go back in the day and you look at Miami, you look at Ohio State, look at Bama. How many guys get opportunities to play in the NFL just because they go to Bama? So all of a sudden, the pro day, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, you go to pro day.
Remember, it was a guy that barely played at Bama. Like, he was on kickoff team in the second team, and he got drafted.
Oh yeah,
just off of playing at Bama.
The example I got is Rob Foster, who's from Pittsburgh. He's a 5-star kid that went down to Bama. He's supposed to be all everything. He gets hurt, gets passed up. He barely plays. But Rob Foster gets a chance in the NFL. Why? Because, again, he went to Bama, 5-star kid. So it's the same thing. I mean, you look at Georgia this year, the speculation is that there's going to be anywhere from 11 to 14 guys drafted in the first 5 rounds for Georgia. Well, oh, yeah. If you're at Pro Day and you're just one of those guys that are depth guys, you're still going to get your shot. Yeah, you might not be going first round, second round, but the name of the game is to get there. And once you get there, make things happen. And as a matter of fact, sometimes as a free agent or sometimes a lower draft pick, you're getting drafted by a team that really wants to utilize your skill set in their particular scheme, where you're going to be even more productive. So I think these guys need to settle down, slow down. But we'll see what happens, because at the same time that, you know, possible guys leave, possible guys are coming in. And again, there's speculation that some big names could be coming into Georgia. And one of the bigger names that are out there is Caleb Williams. I mean, nobody knows what he's going to do, but what do you think he should do?
Right now, I would say, since Georgia won Natty, he should possibly wait to see, because we all know USC, but if he actually, given like how people been spreading rumor that Georgia saves in it, he need to wait to like after next week and see, because everybody announced, are they leaving in portal, or are they going to leave, because we got two quarterbacks that possibly might not be here next year, or might be going to another team.
Yeah.
So I'll wait my options out. If I was him, I'll wait my options out.
I agree. You know what I mean? I think he went to Oklahoma because he thought there was a chance to win a title at the same time of being in a dynamic offense with a coach.
And Lincoln, because of Lincoln Riley.
Exactly. A coach is really going to utilize him. But even at Oklahoma, you got to admit, he had a chance to possibly win a natty. I mean, it was really an anomaly that their defense wasn't as good as it could have been with Grinch at defense coordinator, because they started to step up things a little bit at Oklahoma on the defense side of the ball last year. But if I'm him, you know, I'd do exactly what you said. I'd wait just a little bit, because you already know the door is open at USC. You can go to USC anytime you want. Lincoln Riley's going to open up that door and say, hey, here you go. It's open for you if you want. He can go back to Oklahoma if he really wanted to. But if I'm him and I'm that family, I look and I say, what does Georgia have in the cupboard? How would you use me? Who am I going to be throwing the football to? Because I really believe that they could win another natty next year, quite honestly, if they have the right guy under center and they have some key pieces. I'm saying that, and I know I'm speaking, you know, going really ahead, but when you look at their schedule next year, outside of Oregon, they don't really have a tough schedule. Like, they don't have – I mean, it's a winnable – I mean, it's like it's lined up.
The crazy thing, this could come work out for Georgia perfect, because we're going to be young on the defense side of the ball. We're not going to be young on offense, but we're going to be young on the defense side of the ball. So, this our toughest game right now going to be Oregon. Then, you know –
After Oregon, you got time to grow as a young defense. You got Samford, you got South Carolina, you got Kent State, you got Missouri. That's not going to really give you the problems that they could. And then you got Auburn. You know what I mean? And I think Auburn might be a bigger test for us, because I think it'll be a much better team than what they were last year. You know, just a new coach being able to bring in his system, his players, his style, and they're going to get much better. But then like Vanderbilt, Florida with a brand new coach, Tennessee. That I think they're going to be an upstart program next year. They'll bounce back a little bit. But Mississippi State, Kentucky, Georgia Tech, I mean, really, if they have the guy under center that can help you score points and can help your defense grow, it's really conceivable that they could find themselves back in the college football playoffs next year and trying to defend their title and maybe going up against an Alabama in the SEC title game, quite honestly.
Again.
And then maybe getting back into the playoff race
again
because you were undefeated, or maybe, you know, playing at a high level. So I don't know.
And
I think
possibly win the national championship again,
and I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I'm ready for this dynasty to start, so we can really start trolling folks and throwing some stuff out at people.
They say we need two or three more. Okay,
well, I'm
with it. Let's go get another.
And then I'd be remiss not to even talk about, you know, they did pick up the commitment. Ernest Green, the four-star offensive guard from California. He's a legacy kid from the state of Georgia. But that boy can ball. He's going to help that. He's a mauler. And, you know, when you come from a legacy of a family that played the game, there's going to be some nuances of being able to play within the trenches that are going to help immediately. That helps big time. And recruiting is starting to pick up again for 2023. And I think we got recruiting this week, right? This weekend. So Kirby's going to be able to bring that hardware, have them look at it, touch it, feel it.
Yes, sir. Let them get the feel of what's coming from the future. Get a little touch on the hardware. Yeah.
Little kiss on it, little hug, little tug on it.
Yes, sir. Hold it high a little bit, you know.
Yeah, man. That's going to be nice. I mean, I just can't wait to see the pictures and everything
else. Remember I said there's a couple months. Kirby already was getting elite guy before he even won a championship.
Yeah, man.
Just imagine what he about to do. He won one. Yeah, so let's see what's about to happen since he won a national championship in recruiting now.
Yeah, because there's a big difference. Some guys win national championships and they're not really that coach that people really truly love. Kirby is truly a relationship guy, man. The families love him. The players love him. I mean, yeah, you know, you're going to have some that have some hard feelings because they think they should get some preferential treatment. I mean, that's in any program. But when it really comes down to it, you got families and you got friends and everybody else at the program that really love the guy because they know he's sincere and he believes in the University of Georgia. He believes in those kids. He believes in each and every one of them achieving the goals that they want to achieve. So I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, man, but it's an exciting time at the University of Georgia. It's an exciting time for the program. It's an exciting time. And not only that, I think it even spurns off into different parts of the actual athletic program, because now I think this puts a little heat on the basketball program.
Yeah, big time. They got
big time heat.
Big time heat.
I mean, Josh Brooks, you know, friend of the program. He's been on the program. What are they going to do with the basketball program now? I mean, you got the women's program. They're out there doing what they
do. Even the women's program balling. I'm like, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So you got Crane. I don't know. He's on the clock now, man.
Yeah. That seat got hot. That seat has been hot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because look, another thing, you got to look at it. A lot of the basketball players from the Georgia team left last year, they doing good at other teams now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's another thing. I'm like, yeah, he might not be it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, man. So it's fun, exciting time to University of Georgia. But I don't know, man. I'm just going to settle down. I'm going to try to rest the rest of this week, get ready for this parade on Saturday. I think
the parade
is Saturday. Hopefully it's going to be televised. Hopefully if you can get down there and enjoy it. No, you need to put it down.
If y'all at the parade, I will be out there. I might be a little bit intoxicated, but I will be lit.
Man, have you seen some of the videos? You see the one Barstool video that they put out? Oh, my gosh. Them boys is partying down there in Athens. I tell you that. I wish I was there.
I'm trying to join them.
Yeah, man, they was partying in Indy. Everywhere they were at, they were partying. And I feel bad because, like, my wife asked me, she said, you're going to go somewhere and watch the game? Because I'm in Virginia. And I said, no. I said, I can't do it. I said, because if something goes wrong, I do not want to be somewhere where I don't want to be if they don't win this natty. But I could have partied with some alum, but I chose to be at home and woke my son up, let him know that they had won the natty. He was all excited, the young one. So it was a good time, though. But hey, man, anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here?
We won the natty, the national champions. No more 1980 tweets, man. We trolling, popping shit all year. Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs, national champions. Just letting y'all know, though, you know, the season is not over for the 100 Sanford podcast. We're going to continue to do what we do. I feel privileged to have been able to be a part of this team with myself, Trey, Graham Coffee. First year, first
national
championship.
Champions.
I mean, that's phenomenal. Year. And you go back and you look at some of the people that we had on and talked about it, Greg Blue, Josh Brooks. Some of the people that we had come on to the show that have become friends of the program. My man Chris Milton out there, Trey Lee Hale, I mean Mother Keely Ringo. I mean, we built some
fantastic relationships. Pick six.
Yes, sir. The Dr. Chip Six. Chip Six.
Chip Six. And shout out to the superstar coach Coop, our boy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So hey, man, we're going to get up out of here, but, you know, Dawg Nation, celebrate. Enjoy this one.
We're going to see you soon. We got a commitment just in the tight end. Got a commitment. Yes, sir.
Who do we get?
Lawson Lucky. Look at that. We already pulling recruits for the new class. It's up. We here.
Go Dawgs. There we go. I got to put this out on Twitter. What are we doing? What am I doing? All right, man. Let's get up out of here. Go Dawgs, another recruit.
Go Dawgs.
Let's do what we do. Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com. And email us at dawgs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.